Good morning. Not only did I take a lesson from Larry in not wiring up when I was supposed to, I also took a lesson from Larry in dividing this lesson into two parts, because I realized when I started putting it together that I have way too much. What inspired this lesson is I was having a conversation, a short study with somebody from a denominational church, and what I was talking to them about was the example of the church from the Old Testament, and that is Israel's example of what not to do, because we have in life those who are our examples that we should follow, and those who are our examples that we should not follow. And Israel and the kingdom of Israel and the people of Israel are a type of the church. And so we have an example in Israel of what happened to Israel that we as the church, I see happening, and I see has already happened to the church, and it was not good. And so what I want to do is, in this lesson, we'll look at God's plan for Israel, how He intended Israel to be, how Israel botched it, where they went wrong, and what happened as a result, what was the final result for Israel. And then next time, we'll be looking at the same general scope. What was God's plan for the church? How the church botched it? And what happened / happens as a result? And underlying in both of these lessons, this week and next week, we'll be looking at how God fixed the mess that man made. God had a plan. Man ruined it. But God has never just left it up to man to ruin all His plans. God, when God has a plan and man gets in the way and messes things up, God has the fix. He knows what He's doing. He knows how to fix it. So first off, let's look at God's design, God's plan for Israel. And we'll turn to Exodus chapter 18. This is Moses receiving advice from his father-in-law. And we'll be picking up in verse 14. And when Moses' father-in-law saw all that he did to the people, he said, "What is this thing that you do to the people? Why do you sit yourself alone and all the people stand by you from morning to evening?" And Moses said to his father-in-law, "Because the people come to me to inquire of God. When they have a matter, they come to me, and I judge between one and another, and I make them know the statutes of God and His laws." And Moses' father-in-law said to him, "The thing that you do is not good. You will surely wear away both you and this people that is with you, for this thing is too heavy for you. You are not able to perform it yourself alone. Hearken now to my voice, and I will give you counsel, and God shall be with you. And you, for the people toward God, that you may bring the causes unto God. And you shall teach them ordinances and laws, and shall show them the way wherein they must walk, and the work that they must do. Moreover, you shall provide out of all the people able men, such as fear God, men of truth, hating covetousness, and place such over them to be rulers of thousands and rulers of hundreds, rulers of fifties and rulers of tens. And let them judge the people at all seasons, and it shall be that every great matter they shall bring to you, but every small matter they shall judge. So shall it be easier for yourself, and you shall bear the burdens with, and they shall bear the burdens with you. If you do this thing, and God command you so, then you shall be able to endure, and all this people shall also go to their place in peace." So Moses hearkened to the voice of his father-in-law and did all that he had said. So part of the advice here, part of what Jethro told him there at the end, was, "And God command you so." And so when it says in verse 24, Moses listened to the voice of his father-in-law and did all that he had said. I believe what my takeaway from that is that Moses inquired of God. Moses asked God if that was suitable, because that was part of the advice. Jethro didn't just tell him, go do this. He said, check with God first, make sure. And so when it says that Moses did all that he said, well, that would include check with God, because that was part of the advice. And then Deuteronomy chapter 17. Deuteronomy 17. And there are two sections here that we're going to be looking at. We're going to be looking at a lot in chapter 17. But first off, we're going to be looking from verses 8 through 13. Now this is God talking to Moses. If there arise a matter too hard for you in judgment between blood and blood, between plea and plea, and between stroke and stroke, being matters of controversy within your gates, then you shall arise and get up unto the place which the Lord your God shall choose, and you shall come unto the priests, the Levites, and unto the judge that shall be in those days, and inquire. And they shall show you the sentence of judgment, and you shall do according to the sentence which they of that place which the Lord shall choose shall show you, and you shall observe to do according to all that they inform you, according to the sentence of the law which they shall teach you, and according to the judgment which they shall tell you, you shall do. You shall not decline from the sentence that they shall show you, to the right hand or to the left. And the man that will do presumptuously, and will not hearken unto the priest that stands to minister there before the Lord your God, or unto the judge, even that man shall die. And you shall put away the evil from Israel, and all the people shall hear and fear, and do no more presumptuously. Now, before I comment too heavily on this, let's go ahead and read the next section. Just pick up where we left off, verse 14 through 20. And look at the contrast here between what we just read and what comes next. When you are come into the land which the Lord your God shall give you, and shall possess it, and shall dwell therein, and shall say, I will set a king over me, like as all the nations that are about me, you shall in any wise set him king over you, whom the Lord your God shall choose. One from among your brethren shall you set as king over you. You may not set a stranger over you, which is not your brother. But he shall not multiply horses to himself, nor cause the people to return to Egypt, to the end that he should multiply horses. For as much as the Lord has said to you, you shall henceforth return no more that way. Neither shall he multiply wives to himself, that his heart may turn not away. Neither shall he greatly multiply to himself silver and gold. And it shall be, when he sits upon the throne of his kingdom, that he shall write him a copy of this book, of this law, in a book, out of that which is before the priests and the Levites. And it shall be with him, and he shall read therein all the days of his life, that he may learn to fear the word of his God, to keep all the words of this law and these statutes, and do them, that his heart be not lifted up above his brethren, and that he turn not aside from the commandment to the right hand or to the left, to the end that he may prolong his days in his kingdom, he and his children in the midst of Israel. So you'll hear the argument that Israel was meant to have a king, and they always turn here, because here it's predicted that Israel will have a king. But notice the key phrase in verse 14. There's a couple key phrases, actually. When they dwell in the land that God gives them, they will say, I will set a king over me, like all the nations that are about me. He says, one of these days it's going to be their idea. They're going to do it for their own reasons, for themselves. The people are going to want a king. But if you back up to that first section that we read, in verse 9. And you shall come to the priests, the Levites, and unto the judge that shall be in those days, and inquire, and they shall show you the sentence of judgment. This is God's design. This is the way God wanted it to be. When you have a problem, when you have a difficulty that you can't solve yourselves, go to the priests, the Levites and to the judge that shall be in those days. I believe these judges that he's talking about here are in reference to the same type of judges that Jethro advised Moses to set up. Men who know the law, men who fear the Lord, men who are not covetous, men who are not greedy and will succumb to a bribe, in other words. He says, those judges. Could he not have said, and go to the king, that shall be in those days? Wouldn't that have been just as easy? But that's not what he said. He said, and go to the judge that will be in those days. Israel was not designed to have a king. And we'll get into that a little more heavily as we look at how Israel messed it all up. How did they botch it? And so again, the judges that it's talking about there in chapter 8 is not the same as these judges in the book of Judges. And we'll turn over there and just look at one example in Judges chapter 3. So just right at the beginning of Judges, where the judges came from and why. In chapter 3 and verses 5 through 11. And the children of Israel dwelt among the Canaanites, the Hittites and the Amorites and the Perizzites and the Hivites and the Jebusites, and they took their daughters to be their wives, which was against the law, and gave their daughters to their sons and served their gods. And the children of Israel did evil in the sight of the Lord and forgot the Lord their God and served Balaam in the groves. Therefore the anger of the Lord was hot against Israel, and he sold them into the hand. And you guys think Mephibosheth is hard. You say this, somebody else say this name. Into the hand of Cushan-Rishathaim, that guy, king of Mesopotamia. So this name keeps coming back. We're just going to say that guy or the king of Mesopotamia because that's a whole lot easier. And the children of Israel served that guy 8 years. And when the children of Israel cried unto the Lord raised up a deliverer to the children of Israel who delivered them, even Othniel the son of Kenaz, Caleb's younger brother. And the Spirit of the Lord came upon him, and he judged Israel and went out to war. And the Lord delivered the king of Mesopotamia into his hand, and his hand prevailed against that guy again. And the land had rest 40 years, and Othniel the son of Kenaz died. So this is the idea. You see here, he's called a judge. He judged Israel. He's a deliverer. He's a rescuer. He doesn't sit in a judgment seat and wear the white curly hair and judge matters of law. Think of Samson. Samson was a rage monster. He was an angry man who had a personal vendetta. But because of his personal vendetta, the Philistines took their attention, took their focus off Israel as a whole, and focused on one man in Israel. And God judged the Philistines and destroyed the Philistines by the hand of that one man. And so these judges that we're reading about, they are not magistrates. They are not ministers of the law on any level. And so these judges that God was referring to back in Deuteronomy 17 when he said you'll go to the priests and the Levites and to the judges in those days, he's not talking about these judges. The 15 judges that we can read about in Judges. Samuel, really, of that whole lot, was the only, and possibly Eli, were the only actual judges that were among those 15 judges. So I don't think these are the judges that we're talking about. So look at, I'm going to kind of switch gears ever so slightly and look at Genesis chapter 45. So one of the reasons that we can look at Deuteronomy 17, 14 through 20 and the way God instructs on how to go about setting up a king and having a king is, well, God predicted it, so it must be part of God's plan. That must be what he wanted. But look at chapter 45 here. And we'll read 1 through 8. This is, well, you'll get the context in just a second. And Joseph could not refrain himself before all them that stood by him, and he cried, cause every man to go out from me. And there stood no man with him while Joseph made himself known to his brothers. And he wept aloud, and the Egyptians in the house of Pharaoh heard. And Joseph said to his brethren, I am Joseph, and does my father yet live? And his brethren could not answer him, for they were troubled at his presence. And Joseph said to his brethren, come near to me, I pray you. And they came near. And he said, I am Joseph, your brother, whom you sold into Egypt. Now therefore do not be grieved or angry with yourselves that you sold me here, for God did send me before you to preserve life. For these 2 years has the famine been in the land, and yet there are 5 years more, in which there shall be neither earing nor harvest. And God sent me before you to preserve you a posterity in the earth, and to save your lives by a great deliverance. So now it is not you that sent me here, but God. And he has made me a father to Pharaoh, and a lord in all his house, and a ruler throughout all the land of Egypt. So, did Joseph's brothers know that when they sold him into slavery? They did it out of anger, out of jealousy, out of envy, and they were guilty. They were not innocent just because it was God's plan. God's plan was to preserve their lives, and if you back up even further, you'll find that God told Abraham, it's not time to inherit Canaan, that your descendants are going to spend 400 years in a strange land that will not be theirs. And so God gave Abraham this warning long before Joseph was even born, that your children are going to be in a strange land that won't be theirs, that won't belong to them. And so just because God predicted it, and just because God used it, doesn't mean that the men who carried it out were innocent. So when Israel decides they're going to have a king, it's not a good thing. We're going to see that. That was how they totally ruined everything. So in Judges chapter 8, this is the right answer here. This is Gideon. Gideon has just delivered the people with a mighty deliverance because God was with him. Remember, Gideon started out with 30,000 men, going against an army of approximately 300,000. And God started him out with 30,000, and God told him, you have too many men. I can't deliver you with that number because you'll think you did it yourself. And God gives him a couple different tests, and he whittles away his army. And the next thing you know, he's got 300 men going against 300,000 men. And God tells him, I'm doing it so that you'll know that I'm with you and that I'm doing it and that it's not through you. So after this mighty victory over 300,000 men with a lousy 300, here's the response of the people. Then the men of Israel said, we'll begin in verse 22, sorry, Judges 8, verse 22 and 23. Then the men of Israel said to Gideon, rule over us, you and your son's son also, for you have delivered us from the hand of Midian. And Gideon said to them, I will not rule over you, neither shall my son rule over you. The Lord shall rule over you. Gideon gives the right answer. This is the way God designed Israel. God is their king. They have judges, and they have Levites, and they have priests that are to guide them and instruct them in the law. And God is their king. They don't have a physical king. This was the design. And we'll see this again in 1 Samuel 8. I could probably accept the notion that Israel was meant to have a king, if not for 1 Samuel 8. I could probably be led down that road from Deuteronomy 17, if not for 1 Samuel 8. Because here, this straightly gives God's feelings on the matter. So beginning in verse 4 of 1 Samuel 8, we'll read through 10. Then all the elders of Israel gathered themselves together and came to Samuel unto Ramah. And they said to him, behold, you are old, and your sons do not walk in your ways. Now make us a king to judge us like all the nations. But the thing displeased Samuel, and when they said, give us a king to judge us. And Samuel prayed to the Lord. And the Lord said to Samuel, listen to the voice of the people and all that they say unto you, for they have not rejected you, but they have rejected me, that I should not reign over them. Pause right there for just a second. Look at what God just said. He said, they haven't rejected you, they have rejected me. I'm their king, God says. And so Gideon was right. When Gideon said, the Lord shall reign over you, I'm not going to do it, my sons won't do it, the Lord will reign over you, Gideon gave the right answer. Because God here says, I am their king. They haven't rejected you, they have rejected me. Read on, beginning in verse 8. Or picking up in verse 8. According to all the works that they have done since the day that I brought them up out of Egypt, even unto this day wherewith they have forsaken me and served other gods, so do they now to you. So he said in verse 7, they haven't rejected you. And then he said, just like they've done to me, they've done to you. So he's telling him they really have rejected you, but more so, more importantly, they've rejected me. Continue on from verse 9. Now therefore, listen unto their voice, howbeit, protest solemnly unto them, and show them the manner of the king that shall reign over them. And Samuel told all the words of the Lord unto the people that asked of him a king. So, not only did God say, they've rejected me, he said, protest. Solemnly protest. Explain to them that they're doing the wrong thing. And as we can read, they accept full responsibility. And they say the damage that our children and future generations shall do with their king will be on our heads. And so God instructs Samuel to go and find them a king. And so begins the problems. So what happened as a result? Just a reminder, though, before we go into the result, let's backtrack to Deuteronomy 17. And think on this for just a second. Think about the kind of king that they were told they were going to have. I'm not going to read it again. I'm just going to bullet point here. So, he said, a man of God's choosing. God said, I will pick the man. Then he said, an Israelite, not a stranger. You're not going to have a stranger rule over you. Have an Israelite. He told them not to use horses. He told them not to return to Egypt. He told them to only have one wife. Do not amass wives for yourselves. For some reason, I have that one up there twice, so I missed something. Let me back up. What came after the one wife? Not to multiply to himself wives, and not to return to... that he turn not away, and not to amass wealth. Well, I'm not sure which one I lost there. I lost one of them. Told him to write a copy of the law. He told him to consider himself equal with his brother and not to depart from the commandments to the right side or to the left. Now, what king did all these things? About the only thing that they got right is an Israelite and not a stranger. That's about the only thing that all kings did. We had the kings turning to Egypt for aid. We had the kings returning to Egypt. Jeroboam did go to Egypt. A whole mass of people returned to Egypt in the days of Jeremiah as a result of having a king. Not a single one, not one king, not even David, wrote his own personal copy of the law. God told him, you will write a copy of the law so that you will not forget it. Not a single one wrote a copy of the law. Every one of them exalted themselves above their brethren, which he says not to do. David's about the only one I can think of that didn't. Remember when David said, I'm thirsty, I need water? I really wish for some water from the well of Bethlehem. And his mighty men went and fought their way to the well and brought him water. He said, I can't do that. That's the blood of my brother, and you risked your lives for it. And he dumped it on the ground. David's about the only one I can think of that considered himself equal with his brother, and he did not exalt himself above the people. Everybody else did. Not to use horses. Do you realize David, the second king of Israel, was the last king until Jesus to ride a mule? When Jesus rode in on the mule in Jerusalem, he was the first king to have ridden on the mule since David, because Solomon, David's son, went after the horses. They didn't keep this list. There are 10 things here. I know I missed one because for some reason I do the same thing in twice. I had 10. I really did. But so a man of God's choosing, they stopped that too. After Solomon was anointed, there was one king that I can think of in Israel Well, Jeroboam was told by God that he would be king, but he went after trying to secure it for himself anyway. And Jehu is the only other king that I can think of in Israel that God specifically anointed and singled out and chose. Aside from that, their whole line in Israel was not chosen by God. Which one only had one wife? Maybe Saul? No, Saul had more wives too. Everybody had more wives. Everybody. Every one of them amassed wives. If anyone could have been said to have amassed wives, that would be Solomon. And he was supposed to be the wisest of their kings. Not a one of them kept these things. Not one. Not one king kept this law. So, when compared to this list, the kingship in Israel is a dismal failure. Dismal failure. It doesn't even come close. So you can see why God said they've rejected me when they wanted a king. So what was the result? If we go to Deuteronomy chapter 28, and there are several passages in Deuteronomy, really this whole chapter, the first, I believe, 14 verses, the first 14 verses are blessings, and God says, if you keep my commands, you'll have these blessings. And he gives them very nice things that will come if you keep my commands. And then the rest of the chapter, from verse 15 to verse 68, is a scathing rebuke, and God telling them all the horrors that will happen to them if they don't keep the commandment. He even told them they will wind up eating their children. He says that the most docile man among you will eat his own children and not even share with his brethren if you don't serve me, if you go after the false gods. And when Jerusalem was besieged, that's what happened. And so, pick up in verse 58. We'll read verses 58 through 64. He says, "If you will not observe to do all the words of this law that are written in this book, that you may fear the glorious and fearful name of the Lord your God, then the Lord shall make your plagues wonderful, and the plagues of your seed, and the great plagues and of long continuance, and sore sicknesses and of long continuance. Moreover, he will bring upon you the diseases of Egypt, which you were afraid of, and they will cleave unto you. And every sickness and every plague, which is not written in the book of this law, them will the Lord bring upon you until you be destroyed." So he says, even the plagues that I didn't include in this book, just in case I missed anything, you're going to suffer those too. And you shall be left few in number, whereas you were as the stars of the heaven for multitude, because you would not obey the voice of the Lord your God. And it shall come to pass that the Lord, that as the Lord rejoiced over you to do good, rejoiced over you to do you good and to multiply you, so the Lord will rejoice over you to destroy you and to bring you to naught. And you shall be plucked from the land whither you go to possess it. And the Lord shall scatter you among all the people, from one end of the earth even to the other, and there you shall serve other gods, which neither you nor your fathers have known, even wood and stone. So God gives this tremendous warning. If you don't follow me, if you follow after the other gods, then I'm going to wipe you out. And then we can fast forward to 2 Kings chapter 17, and we will see that it is the kings who brought these plagues. It is having a king, having a leader that did not follow after God, having a king to set up idols for them, that led them down this road that ultimately destroyed them. So in 2 Kings 17, verses 7 through 23, "For so it was that the children of Israel had sinned against the Lord their God, which had brought them up out of the land of Egypt from under the hand of Pharaoh the king of Egypt, and had feared other gods, and had walked after the statutes of the heathen whom the Lord cast out from before the children of Israel and of the kings of Israel, which they had made." So who made it? Who made the other gods? The kings of the children of Israel. "And the children of Israel did secretly those things which were not right against the Lord their God. And they built them high places, in all their cities, and from the tower to the watchman to the fenced city, and they set them up images and in groves in every high hill and under every green tree. And there they burn incense in all the high places, as did the heathen whom the Lord wrought wicked things to provoke the Lord. As did the heathen whom the Lord carried away before them, and wrought wicked things to provoke the Lord to anger. For they served idols, whereof the Lord had said to them, "You shall not do this thing." Yet the Lord testified against Israel and against Judah by all the prophets and by all their seers, saying, "Turn from your evil way, and keep my commandments and my statutes according to all my laws, which I commanded your fathers, and which I sent you by my servants the prophets. Notwithstanding, they would not hear, but hardened their necks like to the neck of their fathers, that did not believe in the Lord their God. And they rejected his statutes and the covenant which he made with their fathers, and his testimonies that he testified against them, and they followed vanity and became vain, and went after the heathen that were round about them, concerning whom the Lord had charged them that they should not do like them. And they left all the commandments of the Lord their God, and made them molten images, even two calves, and made a grove, and worshipped all the hosts of heaven, and served Baal." So notice the two calves there. Goes back to the fourth king. King number four. I got tied for four. Jeroboam, the son of Nebat. And we're going to read about him a little bit more in just a second. So he set up the two calves and made a grove and worshipped all the hosts of heaven and served Baal. And they caused their sons and their daughters to pass through the fire and used divination and enchantments and sold themselves to do evil in the sight of the Lord to provoke him to anger. Therefore the Lord was very angry with Israel and removed them out of his sight. There was none left but the tribe of Judah only. And Judah did not keep the commandments of their Lord their God, but walked in the statutes of Israel, which they made. And the Lord rejected all the seed of Israel, and afflicted them, and delivered them into the hand of spoilers, until he cast them from his sight. For he rent Israel from the house of David, and they made Jeroboam the son of Nebat king, and Jeroboam drove Israel from following the Lord, and made them to sin a great sin. For the children of Israel walked in all the sins of Jeroboam, which he did. They did not depart from them, until the Lord removed Israel out of his sight, as he had said by all his servants the prophets. So was Israel carried away out of their own land to Assyria unto this day. So this is the final indictment on Israel. This is the result. But look what he said about Judah. This is all about Israel. This is about the northern 10 tribes. But then he says Judah didn't do any better. Verse 19, "Also Judah kept not the commandments of the Lord their God, but walked in the statutes of Israel, which they made." And so the result, as we're seeing here, is they lost the kingdom. The kingdom was taken away from them as a people. Jeremiah chapter 3, verses 6 through 8. Jeremiah 3 and verses 6 through 8. "The Lord said also unto me in the days of Josiah the king, Have you seen that which backsliding Israel has done? She has gone up on every high mountain and under every green tree, and there she has played the harlot. And I said, after she had done all these things, turn unto me. But she returned not. And her treacherous sister Judah saw it. And I saw that for all the causes whereby backsliding Israel committed adultery, I had put her away and given her a bill of divorce. Yet her treacherous sister Judah feared not, but went and played the harlot also." So here we find God divorced Israel. He wrote her a bill of divorce and sent her away. And he says Judah saw it, and it made no difference. They didn't straighten out when they saw what happened to their sister. And so, final result on Judah. In Luke chapter 20, we find that their fate is identical. The kingdom is being taken away from them. In Luke chapter 20, verses 9 through 19, "Then he began to speak to the people this parable. A certain man planted a vineyard and let it go forth to husbandmen and went into a far country for a long time. And at the season He sent a servant to the husbandmen that they should give him of the fruit of the vineyard. But the husbandmen beat him and sent him away empty. And again he sent another servant, and they beat him also and entreated him shamefully and sent him away empty. And again he sent a third, and they wounded him also and cast him out. Then said the Lord of the vineyard, "What shall I do? I will send my beloved son. It may be they will revere him when they see him." And when the husbandmen saw him, they reasoned among themselves, saying, "This is the heir. Come, let us kill him, that the inheritance may be ours." And they cast him out of the vineyard and killed him. What therefore shall the Lord of the vineyard do unto them? He shall come to them and destroy these husbandmen, and shall give the vineyard to others. And when they heard it, they said, "May it never be." And he beheld them and said, "What is this then that is written? The stone which the builders rejected, the same is become the head of the corner. Whosoever shall fall upon that stone shall be broken, but on whomsoever it shall fall, it shall grind him to powder." And the chief priests and the scribes the same hour sought to lay hands on him, and they feared the people, for they perceived that he had spoken this parable against them. They understood. They got it. The kingdom is being taken away. It's being given to somebody else. And so, as we close, so far, what we've got is the groundwork laid. Next time we'll look at how this applies to the church. But what happened is God designed Israel to be tribes, to have judges, to have the Levites and the priests that they could lean on for the law. And God himself would be their king. In taking the kingdom away and giving it to somebody else, he did one more thing. And this is that underlying theme that we were talking about, of what did God do to fix the mess that Israel had made. And so in 1 Timothy, I'll give us a glimpse of next week, a little bit of food for thought. 1 Timothy chapter 6 and verses 14 through 16. "That you keep this commandment without spot, unrebukable, until the appearing of our Lord Jesus Christ, which in his times he shall show who is the blessed and only potentate, the King of kings and Lord of lords, who only has immortality, dwelling in the light which no man can approach to, whom no man has seen nor can see, to whom be honor and power everlasting. Amen." Christ is the King. He's the King of kings and the Lord of lords. So, if Christ is the King, God has made himself King again. And we're going to go into that in more detail next week. That's a little bit of food for thought. The lesson hasn't been one of repentance or what we're to do with our lives. But one thing that we can see here is God is King. God needs to reign in our lives. And when God wants us to succeed, he wants to build us up, he wants to plant us, but we have to be willing to let him do that, or he won't. Because he cannot partake in evil, and he cannot build us up and plant us if we don't want to be. And so, if there's anything at this time, if you've rejected the will of God in any way, now's the time to make it right. Now's the time to fix it. Come forward as we stand and sing.